How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of news to talk about this week, as there is every single week here on the show, including the big merger of UFC and World Extreme Cage Fighting. Both companies have been working and operating separately under the Azufa umbrella, but they are now being merged into one group. UFC will have new titles, new fighters. Some guys are going to be cut, but overall, largely a positive move by UFC. Mike Sempervivi and I are going to be talking about that in great detail coming up after the break, as well as all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, including the results of the Bragging Rights pay-per-view last week. We'll talk about Impact this past Thursday night, which did a storyline involving concussions, the Sports Legacy Institute, and we'll talk about what Chris Nowinski had to say about this situation. He, of course, runs the Sports Legacy Institute, which examines the brains of deceased football players, wrestlers, and other sports stars to find out if they are suffering or did suffer from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is brain damage as a result of multiple concussions. So TNA has brought that into storylines. We're going to be talking about that tonight. Plus, SmackDown this past Friday night, a great show, as well as the Dragon Gate USA internet pay-per-view from Friday night. I saw the show. There was some great stuff on that show, and there will be replays on GoFightLive.tv as well on the internet if you want to check that out. We'll talk about that. Plus, preview next week's TNA pay-per-view. Right now, as of television, there is no main event, although the main event will be announced next week on Impact in the final few moments on the show. So we'll tell you what that is. It's going to be a spoiler, but we'll talk about it here on the program. Plus, more on the Undertaker-Brock Lesnar situation from last week. We'll talk about Linda McMahon's Day of Reckoning coming up in the next couple of days. Tuesday, in fact. This season of Ultimate Fighter, injury to a top WWE star, WWE filing a lawsuit against Connecticut, and winning, in fact, in what I thought was the most ridiculous thing Vince McMahon had ever done, and I was wrong. We're going to talk about that, plus the new main event for Survivor Series and a lot more. Probably taking your phone calls and emails as well. So it's going to be a packed show today, and we're going to kick it off after this first break talking UFC and World Extreme Cage Fighting merging. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. The big story of the week, one of the big stories of the year, UFC and World Extreme Cage Fighting are merging together, effective immediately, as Dana White said, although they are going to be doing a couple of final WEC shows. I'm going to read the press announcement here today, and then we'll talk about it in detail. UFC adds featherweight and bantamweight divisions. UFC also announces deal with Versus to air 4 fights in 2011. In a media conference call today, this being Thursday, Ultimate Fighting Championship President Dana White announced the UFC is adding 2 new championship divisions at bantamweight 135 and featherweight 145, while also announcing a new television deal with the Versus Network to air 4 UFC fights in 2011. As the UFC continues to evolve and grow globally, we want to be able to give fans title fights in every weight division, said Dana White. This is a big day for the sport and the athletes who will have the opportunity to fight on the biggest stage in the world. The 2 new divisions feature WEC featherweight champion Jose Aldo, who will now be recognized as the reigning UFC featherweight champion, and WEC bantamweight champion Dominic Cruz. White confirmed that the winner of the December 16th lightweight title fight between WEC champion Ben Henderson and top contender Anthony Pettis live on Versus will take on the winner of the UFC 125 main event title bout between champion Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard. The upcoming fight will serve as a UFC lightweight title unification bout to be held next year. White also stated that the UFC is expanding its presence on the Versus Network in 2011 and will increase its number of UFC events from 2 to 4 per year. Versus is scheduled to air the 2 remaining live WEC events in 2010 on November 11th and December 16th. The November 11th event in Las Vegas will feature the California kid Uriah Faber's debut at bantamweight as he takes on Takeya Mizugaki, while the December 16th event in Glendale, Arizona will feature Henderson Pettis and a bantamweight title clash between Dominic Cruz and challenger Scott Jorgensen, with the winner becoming the new UFC bantamweight champion. And Dana said, we have a great relationship with the Versus Network. We look forward to working with them to give UFC fans even more free fights in 2011. So WEC, UFC merging. And aside from the fact that some guys are going to be cut, there are a ton of positives to this deal. And Mike, I'll let you get in here and talk about a few of those.
Yeah, you know, it's great for the divisions, and yeah, it's kind of stinks in a way, because just being a big fan of WEC, and I, you know, the people that did watch their shows, it was hard for you not to fall in love, considering that, you know, the shows were free on Versus, and they were all great for the most part. Up and down, almost every show was great that they aired, with really exciting fights, but obviously, you know, something's not translating, and I think Uriah Faber was one of the ones who said it. I mean, the fact that it's amazing that you'd actually have to say what the difference is between WEC and UFC, but there were people out there that were kind of confused by that, and as the sport continues to grow and take on new people, it's just easier in general to have those titles, the 135 and 145-pound titles, as a part of, you know, the UFC name, and it's going to be great for the guys who are at the top of the food chain in those divisions to get the opportunities that they really deserve because of the hard work and the great fights that they've put in to make some real money and to get some real visibility. I mean, for as big as the Uriah Faber Aldo fight was, and as big as the Faber Pulver fight was, realistically, I mean, it could have been even bigger in all likelihood if it was pushed by that UFC machine and had the UFC attachment to it. So I think it's a great idea for the divisions. Hopefully, you know, there are going to be fighters that lose their jobs. Hopefully they can pick up other ones, but it's my hope there's also no office people and people like that are cut out of it too. I guess that's going to be kind of the sad thing there. But realistically, besides losing wreckage on Versus and them having a couple less shows, I can't see what the, you know, the real negatives are in any of this. It's going to be good for these guys to really make money.
Well, the two negatives are, number one, you're not going to get those great standalone WEC shows anymore, which is in fact kind of sad. And the other one is you are going to see some fighters getting cut because there's only so many slots in UFC. And granted, one of the main reasons they did this merger was because they need more fighters to do the number of shows they want to do every year because guys are constantly getting hurt. You know, they got a lot of guys under contract, but if you look at some of the cards that have been run this year and are still to run this year, and it's going to happen again, I mean, you had some cards that looked pretty good, and then due to injuries, by the time the shows rolled around, you know, Frank Mir and Mirko Krokop headlining a show, I mean, you're asking for trouble right there, but you're going to add a large roster of available fighters, and the big benefits are, number one, as you mentioned earlier, exposure. I mean, you're looking at guys that if they had the best fight on the show, and there were some awesome fights in WEC in the last year, those guys that had the best fight on the show, they made maybe $10,000 as a bonus. Whereas the big UFC events, if those guys had the same fight on those shows, you're looking at $80,000 bonuses. Not to mention the fact that the top fighters on a UFC pay-per-view, their base pay and their win bonuses are dramatically larger than for the guys that are fighting in WEC. So you had guys that really helped build World Extreme Cage Fighting. Uriah Faber, I mean, even guys like Jens Pulver. I mean, these guys, they had some great fights, memorable events, and they really weren't making a lot of money. So this is an opportunity for those guys to make the money of the major UFC stars. And as noted, I mean, I was there for the brunch, the Uriah Faber brunch that took place over the UFC 121 weekend. And he said that he made that comment about, you know, whenever people used to say, hey, don't you fight in the UFC? I used to always correct them. I used to always say, no, I fight in the WEC. He said, now I don't even bother. I just say, yes, I fight in the UFC. Now he can actually say, yes, I fight in the UFC and not have to even bother thinking that he should be correcting these people. So that's a big plus. And I guess one of the other big positives is, I hate to compare UFC to Nitro, but now they've got essentially a large batch of the guys in UFC that would have been considered cruiserweights, where WCW back in the day had some shows with some horrendous main events, and that's not the case in UFC. I mean, they usually have really good main events, but if the day comes where you have a show where all of your main eventers end up injured and you have to run a Mirko Krokop Frank Mir show, which would not be the same as Hulk Hogan versus Roddy Piper, but I'm just throwing out an example there. You know, if you've got a fight like that in the main event, now you can say, okay, well, we're going to have 235-pound WEC stars fighting in the semi-main, and you're pretty much guaranteed an awesome fight. So regardless of what the card is from now on, you're almost guaranteed a great fight on every show, as long as you can get a 145-pound or 135-pound fight on that show. And that's going to be a huge benefit in terms of increasing the show quality pretty much immediately.
Yeah, I've been a big proponent of actually getting WEC guys on UFC shows and having UFC guys in reverse, you know, Ultimate Fighter, you know, guys who you're not sure about, but you don't really want to put them on TV. You don't have room on an undercard that you put them on the undercard of WEC shows. I don't see how that would have been a bad idea. Now, this way, you don't have to worry about that. And that's, you know, that's the best example was Indianapolis. It was kind of a rough-looking card coming in. I mean, obviously, you never know what's going to happen on a fight card anyway. All of those fights could have been fantastic. But during times where there are injuries and you need late replacements for fights or times where you just have what looks to be a relatively flat card, the wealth of talent of those smaller guys, it's just like in boxing, the 135 and 145-pound guys, putting on just big wars and exciting fights and stuff like that. I think it's a great idea. It also provides them some, you know, the ability to freshen up the Ultimate Fighter too. And again, I'm not the biggest fan of the Ultimate Fighter show, but you know, you have a whole, you know, talent pool now of guys fighting to get into those divisions and wanting to be a part of UFC that you're going to be able to showcase there too. So I think it's just another way. It's a really good idea.
Well, one other thing also in terms of the fight bonuses is putting 145 and 135-pound guys on your show is not only going to, A, increase the overall quality of the show, but if you've got, you know, middleweights and even heavyweight guys that light heavyweight guys that have had a history of best fight bonuses, and now they see that, well, shoot, there's 145-pounders on this show. I've got to have an awesome fight in order to get the bonus from this little guy here. I mean, that could theoretically encourage everybody to try to have better fights. We're going to talk more about this when we come back from the break, and we'll talk more about WEC and UFC as well, plus notes from last weekend, and the Undertaker Brock Lesnar story coming up in a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've been talking the WEC-UFC merger, which is coming up following the December WEC event. That will be the final card in the history of WEC. And I wanted to make mention, Mike was talking about it earlier. In fact, all of the office workers in WEC are going to be retained. And for those of you that have been following the sport rather closely, UFC is running a lot of events. They've got a lot of fighters, and they don't have a front office the size of, for example, WWE, which has 500 employees. So it's probably a good thing that they're taking those people on, because they're going to need all the help they can get as they attempt to continue to expand around the world. Although, with this merger, there will be five fewer events from Zuffa coming up in 2011. Although, if you were one of those people who never really watched WEC events, you're actually going to have more UFC events over the course of the year. But for those of you that were watching everything, you're going to have slightly fewer events, which to me is probably for the best.
Yeah, it's that's actually okay if that's the case, too, because it is. That's why people thought there was going to be, you know, a downturn in UFC this year, is just by oversaturation, which I thought was kind of crazy, still for a growing sport, especially when it's growing internationally. But yeah, it gets to trim the fat off of some of those shows a little bit. And as they continue to rack up, they're still going to have their wreckage footage and all that other stuff, too. I mean, it's going to be probably sooner rather than later. They already have their own on-demand service that you can pick off the greatest fights in. I wouldn't be too stunned if coming down the line here, the UFC, Dana White hinted at it, possibly going the WWE direction and starting up their own channel.
He did mention that, and in fact, there were a lot of people that thought that was going to be the big announcement, in fact, that they were going to be starting their own channel. And after the announcement was made that they were merging with WEC, he was asked about that, and he basically downplayed it. So I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But if you look at, like, all of the footage they have of all of their events, I mean, it's something that at some point down the road they probably could start. And let me ask you this question, Mike, because I've never actually asked anyone this before, and I know that any MMA fans listening to this right now are going to be appalled at even suggesting this. But what would you think of the idea of, and I don't even know if Vince McMahon would even consider this for a moment, but or Dana White for that matter, WWE and UFC teaming up to create a combat sports channel?
Oh, it would be great, but it would, you know, how long could it possibly last with the egos that are there as far as, like, equal time and what should be on and this, that, and the other? I mean, it would be kind of nice in a way because they'd probably work together on when they'd schedule pay-per-view so we wouldn't get bombarded, you know, in a weekend with two of them or something like that. But I just think with the egos involved and the fact that they'd be able to realistically pull off such a channel without each other, I don't think it would work. It would be nice, I just don't think it would work.
Yeah, I just look at it like, okay, the WWE Network, I mean, if you watch WWE Classics, and again, I mean, let's be honest, this is never going to happen. And the fact that we're even discussing this, it's kind of ridiculous, but might as well discuss it anyway. WWE Classics On Demand, I think, has 20 hours of new programming a month. 20 hours of new programming a month. Not 20 hours a day, a month. Okay, you're looking at a month having, you know, over 600 hours in it. Let's see, 24 times, how many days? Let's say 31 days in a month. 744 hours in a month. And WWE right now is putting out 20 hours of programming in a month. Obviously, UFC has been broadcasting events since the mid-90s, but it's not like they've been doing weekly television or anything like that. I mean, they've got all of their live events. They got 121 events, and whichever ones were in there, those bonus UFC-type events. You got the WEC events. You've got whatever they purchased from Pride. And I don't even know what they're going to be doing with the WEC video library, but they've got that. But, I mean, realistically, I mean, WWE Network, like a WWE channel, like the Golf Channel, I mean, their idea right now is they don't have enough programming to have all wrestling all the time. So it's going to have a lot of wrestling, but they're also going to have a lot of other programming. And by other programming, I'm talking stuff like sitcoms and, you know,
learning the ropes.
Sure. Things like that. And you know, I don't know if they're going to produce it. I don't know if they're going to be airing a bunch of their own WWE films. I presume they are on this channel, but that sounds horrible. And same thing with UFC. It's like the idea of running a UFC channel. I mean, yeah, you've got a lot of footage, but you know, you're going to be doing tons and tons of repeats and you're probably going to have to come up with other stuff. And again, the idea of Vince McMahon and Dana White working together on any project is ridiculous, especially since WWE strongly considers UFC competition. But it certainly would be a hell of a lot easier to sell a channel where you're going to have a lot of WWE programming for the millions of people that watch WWE every single week, and you're going to have a lot of MMA programming for all of the UFC fans that watch UFC every week. And here's one channel where you can get both WWE and UFC and what other video library that they have at their disposal that they can also put on the channel. And it certainly would make it easier to sell this than each individual group trying to sell that channel separately.
Oh, yeah, and that's the way I think, the only way I think it could work, too, is if they actually need the synergy with each other to actually get on a channel. But there seems to be so many channels out there that are individually, you know, they're seem like they're pointed at, like, two people that may actually like that stuff. And so I just cannot see them working, you know, with each other on it. And WWE certainly has enough programming, if they wanted to actually have wrestling all the time. I think UFC could do it with fights, too. But, yeah, I would see more original programming from both as far as talk shows or highlight shows. Or I'm sure WWE is going to have game shows. And like you were saying, you know, learning the ropes redone and things like that that would be on there, which I can see getting very painful after a while.
Uriah Faber and Takeya Mizugaki is the show November 11th at the Pearl at the Palms Casino. So that will be, let me check the calendar here, that will be next Thursday, in fact. So it looks like it's going to be going head-to-head with TNA. And it's going to be a good show, I would guess. Faber was down in Las Vegas for the UFC 121 weekend. He was at the brunch I was talking about earlier, which he was bundled up. He was 145 pounds, and he needs to get down to 135. He hasn't been down there since college. Actually, he has to get down to 136 since it's not a title fight. But he was all bundled up in a jacket because as he loses weight, he gets colder. He is a very small person. It was actually funny because somebody else there that works for UFC was making a comment that I can't remember who they were talking about, but they said, you know, I never realized how short guys were until I saw them next to me, because I'm very short. And it was the same thing with Uriah Faber. He is actually shorter and smaller than I am, and I never realized that until I saw it, how small I actually am. So anyway, he's down there, he's cutting, he's got some weight to go, but he thinks it's going to be no problem. And he said he feels better at this weight than pretty much any other weight he's fought at. So it should be a super exciting fight. And from that point on, he'll be a UFC superstar. And Mike, do you have a prediction on that fight?
I am going to, I think Aldo can weather a storm, although Christ, Faber can weather the storm from Mizuzaki as far as his punching power goes. I'm always in the tank for Faber, so I'll actually say Faber wins an exciting decision. Actually, I'm wondering, too, what's going to happen to Todd and Frank Mir doing announcing, too?
Well, Frank
Mir, there still be room for them?
Frank Mir's been gone for a while. Ever since he did the deal about how he wanted Brock Lesnar.
That's true. They've had Bonner in there, right?
Yeah, Bonner now. So I don't know what the future of those guys are. I don't expect them. I don't know, really. I actually have no idea now that I think about it. I guess we'll have to find that out. But, yeah, I mean, Stephen Bonner, I mean, it's not like, you know, him losing that job is any big deal because, you know, he just came in and started doing it recently, and he's still a fighter and everything like that. But
well, plus they trot him out for enough media appearances and things like that anyway on behalf of the UFC.
Yeah. I don't know what Todd Harris would do, actually. Maybe he could host if they end up using the wreckage footage or something like that. He could do something like hosting those events or something of that nature. So I don't know what his future is. It's a pretty good question. Let's talk a little bit about UFC. I wanted to mention the Lesnar-Undertaker confrontation. This is what I have determined as of this week. There's a lot of talk about it, and from talking to people in WWE, I believe this is what happened. Their idea was to do something with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar after the show at the press conference. I don't know what it was, but I know that the idea was for something to happen there. And Brock Lesnar and Undertaker having that confrontation while Ariel Helwani was interviewing The Undertaker, that was like a complete coincidence. And in fact, when I asked Paul Heyman about it after the show, I was like, do you know what happened there? And he just said, that Ariel is always in the right place at the right time. And I actually believe Heyman 100% when he mentioned that, because if you look at the story, I mean, Ariel did this. He saw The Undertaker. He had a camera crew. He went over there, and it just happened to be at the time that Brock was passing by. Undertaker did his deal. Brock kept going. And as mentioned, the idea was initially to do something backstage. And I guess that it was actually a great coincidence that Ariel happened to be there, because the idea of doing it backstage fell through when Brock, A, got beaten, which WWE was obviously hoping that he was going to retain the title, but he needed a number of stitches, and his feeling after the show was, I don't want to steal this moment from Cain Velasquez. And realistically, if Brock had gone to the press conference, he would have stolen the press conference from Cain Velasquez. So Brock didn't end up doing the press conference, and I didn't even put two and two together until I heard this from WWE, but after the show, when I went back there for the press conference, I'm walking back to the area there, and it's in a very, I mean, you have to walk literally, well, I shouldn't say literally, but you have to walk through the bowels of the building, as they say in pro wrestling, and in Undertaker matches, actually. And there in the bowels of the building was The Undertaker and Michelle McCool, and they were standing around prior to the press conference, and when it became clear that Brock was not coming out for the press conference, Undertaker and Michelle McCool left. So that pretty much answers that question there. They wanted to do something after the show where there would have been a million people with cameras, video cameras, The press was everywhere. That was the idea, and that fell through. And thankfully for them, Ariel Helwani happened to be there to interview Undertaker and capture a moment on film. So we're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, we were talking about the Undertaker-Brock Lesnar confrontation and the idea that originally this was scheduled to take place after the show in the press conference area with people milling about everywhere with cameras, video cameras, camera phones, the whole nine yards, and due to circumstances, those being Brock losing the fight, Brock did not end up doing the press conference, and so Undertaker and Michelle McCool, who were backstage, ended up leaving, and thankfully for WWE, Brock and Undertaker had their confrontation with Ariel Helwani filming the entire thing, purely via coincidence, immediately after Brock lost and was heading to the backstage area. And I guess, unfortunately for WWE, we talked about this on last week's show, but Dana White did in fact announce Monday that there is no way that Brock Lesnar will be wrestling at a WWE event. He is under exclusive contract. He cannot box. He cannot wrestle. He cannot fight for anyone else. Although, at this point, WWE is hoping that they can still get him in for a huge payoff to work as a guest referee, probably in a match involving The Undertaker and Wade Barrett. So, that is the latest on the situation. It will change a million times by WrestleMania, but that is the news as of today, as we know it. And, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, that would make sense since Wade Barrett is a former bare-knuckle fighter now, isn't he?
That's true.
At first it was just like my first reaction was, just off of hearing about it, you know, they can just make eye contact and two workers will always know how to work. And then, you know, news that WWE had hoped that to get Lesnar on WrestleMania, and they at least wanted to try to open some sort of negotiation with him. I thought, okay, well, that makes, you know, perfect sense, too, with, you know, the Undertaker asking, you know, do you want to go or you want to do this, and Lesnar walking away. And, you know, now of hearing about where Undertaker and Michelle McCool were positioned, I mean, obviously, you know, WWE and The Undertaker had something in mind. How much Lesnar knew about it, I wouldn't think he knew all that much, but he knew he would probably know how to play along with it. Because obviously for him to do anything with WWE would have to be, you know, put through UFC first. So I'm not sure how much he had to know about it. I'm surprised that people thought Ariel Helwani had something to do with it, because he just, I mean, unless he's a far better actor and give him credit for, I mean, he really did seem surprised by the whole thing. And it seems pretty obvious that he was just truly in the right place at the right time. It's not like he doesn't do those types of interviews after the show around the cage with other guys before. I think Jim Ross had even talked about it this week that he did it after the last Lesnar-Carwin show. So, you know, Helwani's down there doing those types of interviews anyway. It was the right place at the right time, and virally for really everyone involved, it worked out for the best, with the exception of Dana White, who seemed to be really tired after last week and probably didn't really want to answer that question.
Yeah, Ariel, he's been on our show several times, and I've known him for a while, and I saw him all weekend, and immediately after this happened, I saw him, and, I mean, his eyes were as wide as saucers, and he could not believe what had just happened, and it was just funny in the week after to hear people saying, oh, well, he was so clearly in on it, and I just thought, I was right there. I guarantee this man was not in on it. Ariel Helwani is not a worker. He is a reporter, and he is a guy that doesn't even watch a lot of pro wrestling anymore, so, you know, this was not a deal. He very much values what he does in his job, and he thought the idea, he did not want people thinking, here I am working an angle with these guys. I mean, petrified of the idea of that thought. And a lot of people did think that, but I think at this point most people have realized that he was, in fact, I mean, he had nothing to do with this. And he was probably more shocked than anybody else that it just happened to happen as he was right there doing that interview.
Yeah, and he seemed to be, too, in the fact that I guess when he first, you know, initially kind of told the story, he thought there was far more interaction than there actually was between the two. As far as, you know, thinking something was really going on, if there were hard feelings or something like that, so. But, you know, again, for virally for everyone involved, it worked out great. And, you know, again, what I don't know what WWE could give the UFC. Obviously, they could give Lesnar a lot of money, which would be nice and would be hard to turn down if the UFC would let him do it to do something there. But it's what do you give the UFC in case he walks in there as special guest referee and, I don't know, blows his tendon out or something like that or some sort of freak injury. I mean, they would really have to make it worth UFC's while. I just can't see that happening.
You know, it was funny that as they were, I mean, in the press area after the show, there was a press conference, and then we went back into another room, and Todd Martin and I were talking about the show, and Dave was writing his column for Yahoo Sports, and Ariel was over on his computer, and the guys were busy editing his video together, and you know, he kept saying, man, I hope this isn't a letdown. I mean, you know, I told you guys about this, and you know, there's already this 18-page thread on SureDog, and I hope that I didn't blow this out of proportion, and it's not as exciting as people are thinking it is. And then after it airs, it's like the most talked about thing in many circles of the entire weekend, even more so than Kane actually winning the title, which it's really astounding when you think about it, because it's the Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. I mean, even if they'd had a real confrontation, they're never going to have a fight. It just amazed me how big a story this ended up being. You know what I mean? It's like, what was so big about this? They had a confrontation. Why were people so into this? I to this day, I really don't have an answer, but I mean, they were. So there you go.
It just shows you naturally, I mean, for every MMA fan that would be in that SureDog thread going nuts about how much they hate Brock Lesnar and how much they hate pro wrestling, and this is more pro wrestling, get this out of here, they're still interested enough to watch the video a million times.
Yeah,
a million people, or at least that thing was seen a million times.
I think it was
That's
a million.
Bizarre.
I think it was a million times by Monday, and I think it's over 2 million. In fact, let me go find out. It's always fun to search the web live here on the air.
It's absolutely it's remarkable that it was a million by Monday and then 2 million more. I mean, that just it's a little bit terrifying actually for what the thing actually was. I mean, and again, there's just some times where you can't buy that type of publicity, and there it was for Ariel Helwani, who's kind of turning into the MMA's Bill Simmons too.
We've got two of them here that I can find. One here has been viewed 224,327 times, and the other one here has been viewed 2,444,385 times. Wow.
Your Texarkana title match with Larry Sweeney wasn't seen that many times, was
No,
it?
I don't think so. Oh, here's another one. 22,000 times. Look at this. I believe... Oh, here's another one. 8,000 views. There's another one with 12,000 views. Yeah, this has got to be over 3 million if you add all these views together.
Now, has anyone started doing anything with the video, like inserting the kid who said, I like turtles, or doing an auto-tune or anything like that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Man, I cannot believe how many times this thing has been seen. So anyway, there's the story, everybody, on the Lesnar-Undertaker thing, and I guess we'll see how it plays out. I should note one more thing, that Ariel was interviewing Dana after the press conference announcing the UFC-WEC merger, and he asked him about this situation. He basically said, you know, you've got a WWE guy that's in the crowd, and apparently he went into business for himself, you know, maybe shooting an angle or whatever for WWE, and are you upset about that? And Dana was like, no, not really. He said, I gave him the tickets. Undertaker's a huge fan. He's been coming forever. And, you know, things happen. Whatever they want to do, they want to do. Brock works for me, and nothing's going to change. And he was very low-key about it, so didn't seem to bother him one bit. I thought he'd have blown his stack.
I wouldn't think so. I think he's at least comfortable at this point now with Brock Lesnar, too. It's not like he's skated by wins or anything like that. I mean, Lesnar kind of, you know, solidified himself, after the Carwin fight, as far as his toughness and his quote-unquote real factor. Not that, I mean, it's just a bizarre thing, but, I mean, for some people, I have a feeling that fight actually did it. So I think he's calm enough in knowing nobody's going to, you know, confuse UFC for WWE anymore. But I guess that kind of also played into the conspiracy theory, because I guess people had no clue that, you know, celebrities and things like that get comp tickets from UFC. You know, because I heard people bitch about that, about how could he have been right there? That's where they always are. That's where celebrities and guys like that happen to be. That's where the UFC puts them. So that's not part of the conspiracy. That's just famous enough to get a good seat.
If it's part of the conspiracy, that means UFC would have had to have been in on it, which they weren't. So it was a coincidence. I want to get into some of the emails here. This one has to do with UFC and Brock. This person here says, with Nelson getting pulled, that being Roy Nelson, from the January 1st pay-per-view, and with Lesnar out for a while, could we see a Lesnar and Nelson match, and what numbers would you be thinking? I can tell you this for pretty much 100% certainty. Brock Lesnar wants that fight. I mean, he has asked for that fight, and I would presume at some point that fight is probably going to happen. I think the idea, Dana, as of, well, a couple of days ago at least, had not talked to Lesnar yet, but he was planning on doing it. And I think the first fight they're probably going to offer is a third fight with Frank Mir. And that fight, what do you think about that fight, actually, Mike?
I would take that fight if and only if I couldn't do Lesnar and Nelson. I don't think the Lesnar-Mir fight is going to change. The second fight, I think, is how the third fight's going to go. I don't care what Mir, you know, if Mir decides to go down to 145 pounds or go up to 350, it won't matter one bit what happens in that fight, I don't think. And with that said, I mean, Nelson and Lesnar, for the aesthetics of it, for a fresh matchup, for the fact that both can talk, all the reasons we want to see Mir and Lesnar again are the reasons that Nelson and Lesnar is going to be a fresher fight. Both guys can talk their ass off. Both guys can sell the fight. And realistically, just when you point, you know, when you put those two guys up there, you know, for the general public to see, I mean, for those who don't care about it, they go look at the matchup between these two guys and the way they look. But then when you look into Nelson a little bit, you have a guy who can, you know, who's got a great story, who's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, who's got some heavy hands, who provides challenges to Lesnar. And I think no matter what, it's a million by fight, and it's a fresher matchup than Mir and Lesnar.
Lesnar apparently has one of the reasons he wanted to fight with Nelson was because he felt that Nelson is a very difficult matchup for him, and he wants to be tested. So I guess we'll see where they end up going there. The Mir-Brock fight, some people think it's a foregone conclusion it's going to be a gigantic number. And maybe it will. I don't know yet. It's way too far out. To me, it's like the second fight was so decisive that to me, I mean, Mir's got to do some miracle work to get people to believe that he can win this fight. But knowing Mir, I mean, Lesnar did just get blown out. And I'm sure Mir can tell you exactly why and how he plans to exploit it. And Brock can be extremely angry and upset because he's coming back from a loss. And it's his first fight back. And some people will be expecting an enjoyable slaughter. Some people will be expecting something different. And you can sell it as a rubber match between the two guys. So I think it's going to do very good, very well. How well, I don't know yet. I would not even be able to make a prediction until probably the final week.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what we would do number-wise or anything like that. It depends on what would be with the card, because I think, yeah, there's just, I don't think it would do as well as the second one just because of how decisive it was. But if you put, you know, obviously with them talking people in, I don't think it's going to do far worse. And depending on what you have on the card, you know, it could do just as well. I just think you can actually get a bigger number out of Nelson and Lesnar just because of the freshness of it.
We're going to head to a break here in just a moment. When we come back, we're going to be taking more of your emails, perhaps phone calls as well. And we have a lot of news to talk about that we haven't even broken the surface on yet, including SmackDown this past Friday night, the Dragon Gate USA Internet pay-per-view from Friday night, which is available now as well on GoFightLive.tv, and a lot of other stuff as well. So that's coming up after this next break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Short segment here. I wanted to read a couple of emails before we head to the break. This person here says, with Tara and Mickie James and TNA now, I noticed on the house shows, it's still Madison Rayne versus the Beautiful People. Why aren't Tara and Mickie James used on the house shows? I actually have not looked at the house show results from this past week, but sometimes those lineups are a little bit behind. They may be added to the shows through the next loop. I really don't have an answer to that question, but I guess I could try and find some of the recent house show reports, and we'll get you that answer when we come back from the break. All right, this person here says, is there really such a place as Sandy Fork, Delaware? Are country folk like the Briscoes common in Delaware? Apparently in southern Delaware, is that correct?
Yes, and unfortunately there's a lot of that throughout central and southern Delaware, yes. Yes, there is a Sandy Fork, Delaware. There is a Slaughter Beach, Delaware, yes.
Slaughter Beach?
Slaughter Beach.
And did that have to do with some great slaughter between Native Americans and immigrants back in the day, or what happened?
No, it was probably somebody who was a descendant of, the first Papa Briscoe to ever be put on Earth, getting into it with a pig, and that was a creation of Scrapple, which is also popular amongst Briscoe folk in Delaware.
Scrapple.
Scrapple.
What
you
is
take
that?
The entire pig and use everything but the oink, literally.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Fry it up, put ketchup or syrup on it, and you've got breakfast.
Huh. We don't have stuff like that out here in Seattle.
Oh, well, just wait till the Briscoes come out and stay at your house one time.
Wow. I'll have to get the, we don't have a barbecue, but I'll get one and have to set that thing up. All right, everybody, after that exciting segment, we are going to head to our top of the hour break. When we come back, another full hour of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll talk about the Survivor Series main event, WWE lawsuit against the state of Connecticut, and a lot more. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. We spent the first hour talking about the UFC-WEC merger, the Undertaker-Brock Lesnar situation, and a lot more. If you missed the first hour, head to WrestlingObserver.com. We'll have a link to this show up later on tonight on the front page, where you can listen to anything that you missed. And, of course, if you ever find the show is preempted in your area, always head to WrestlingObserver.com, as the show streams live from our front page at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, every Sunday. That's WrestlingObserver.com. We also have daily news updates, tons of exclusive features, and a whole bunch of radio shows. If you love this show and you only get a chance to listen to it one time per week, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have a listing of our latest three completely free radio shows on the right-hand side of the front page. Just scroll down, click the link, download it. It's a free MP3. There are no pop-ups. There are no fees, nothing like that. They're completely free. And if you like what you hear, you can consider signing up. It's only $10.99 per month, and for that fee, you get 10 to 15 to 20 radio shows every single week, in addition to our complete archive of shows dating back to 2005. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio, thousands of shows, interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, including Stone Cold, Steve Austin, Bret Hart, Ric Flair, Bruno Sammartino. The list goes on and on. All of it up there in our archives at WrestlingObserver.com. It's a one-time monthly fee, $10.99, and once you pay your monthly fee, you have full access to everything for an entire month. No extra fees for any of the other shows. You pay your $10.99, and you have access to all of our shows, thousands and thousands of them. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. When we come back from this break, more news to talk about. We're going to go over the SmackDown show from this past Friday night. We're going to kick off with that. It was an awesome show. If you've not seen that show, you need to go to WWE's YouTube channel and watch it online. It's fantastic. Also, the Dragon Gate USA Internet pay-per-view, which had an awesome I Quit match, and more. Coming up after the break, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. It's time to talk about SmackDown from this past Friday night, an awesome show. There were two great matches, Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler, an awesome match for the third straight show. They ran the pay-per-view, they ran on Raw Monday night, and they ran on SmackDown, and all three matches were fantastic, and the main event of SmackDown actually was better than the Daniel Bryan match, as Rey Mysterio and Edge and Alberto Del Rio had an excellent three-man triple threat match to determine the new number one contender for Kane's title. Ended up with Edge winning. I thought that match was great, and the show was awesome.
Yeah, I was really, you know, kind of talking last week about what could happen in the Undertaker match. It was going to be interesting to see with Kane and the Undertaker. Obviously, one of them was going to get buried last week, and I was wondering how they were going to transition out of that to either a Kane or an Undertaker title defense against whoever it would be. And it was, I got to be honest, it was awkward after Kane went through his speech initially and was going to have a big moment of silence for the Undertaker's memory and saying that he's the only, you know, the devil's favorite demon or whatever it is. And Alberto Del Rio came out, and I just was wondering how that was going to go. But by the end of the show, with Mysterio running in to attack Alberto, and then he put the 619 on Paul Bearer, which caused Kane to choke Sam him, and then Edge came in. I thought, and you know, from the beginning where I wasn't real sure about it at first, by the end of that show, it actually turned out to go really, really well.
I love that show, and I guess we'll see. I mean, to me, it's like, I would have liked something new. You know, obviously, they're not going to do Kane and Alberto Del Rio yet, but I really think that soon, and by soon, I mean, I shouldn't say soon, because in WWE, that would be tomorrow, but you know, I think by WrestleMania, we'll probably be seeing an Alberto Del Rio babyface turn. And it was like a test during the show when he came out and everybody cheered for him. And then he immediately got them to turn on him when doing the promo with Kane. And I think that the long-term idea probably is that when it's time for Rey to hang up the tights, which could be, I'm not saying it will be, I'm saying it could be as early as WrestleMania, then obviously something would happen. He would be being beaten down. Alberto Del Rio would make the save. The place would go nuts. Rey would pass the torch, and you've got your new babyface Hispanic superstar. And I think that's the direction that they're going, and I think when it actually happens, it's going to be pretty huge.
Yeah, for the sake of his knees, he probably should retire, but even a long vacation, you know, that he doesn't get called back from. You know, a long vacation where they're comfortable with Del Rio being that big baby face for the Latinos. I just think that, yeah, that could actually be a great idea. And I'm really surprised with how well Alberto Del Rio's done on SmackDown, too.
What are your thoughts on the Dragon Gate USA Internet pay-per-view on Friday, with the exception of the first match where, well, everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong?
Yeah, which sent off a chain reaction for me because of the issues with the stream, and then during the break where they were trying to fix the sync issues, and I didn't get any picture at all. I started messing with my own modem and some other things, and then ended up delaying me, sadly, until after the Jacobs Moxley I Quit match. So unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see that yet. I have to check out one of the replays. But and then my screen froze again, and then I got intermission, and then after that I was able to see the rest of it. But unfortunately, I didn't get to see that match because it seemed to be the best one on the show.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems. I mean, obviously everybody had problems with the first match because of the issues with the syncing and that sort of thing. But once they got it fixed, I had like no problems the entire show. And the Jacobs Moxley I Quit match, I thought was outstanding. I mean, I think part of it is, and this is not to take anything away from either guy, but we've seen a lot of I Quit matches in WWE that are like so tame and rather lame, in fact. And this was an example of an I Quit match the way it was supposed to be done. These men didn't like each other. They wanted to kill each other. They went out there and they beat the crap out of each other with spikes, chairs. There was blood everywhere. The thing that I liked about the match was that despite the chair shots and the spike and everything like that, everything was done in such a way that you could watch it and be comfortable in the fact that it was not real. They did not really hit each other in the head with chairs. I mean, they got their hands up. And maybe I'm in the minority here, but I like to see safety in my wrestling. I want to know that my favorite wrestlers are not actually being killed in the ring or having their lives shortened. And they were able to have an awesome match that was worked, which is what wrestling is supposed to be. You go in there and you pretend to kill each other. You don't actually kill each other. That's the idea. And they just did a fantastic job in that match. And the finish was a spike to the groin, which should be a finish in any match. And I did, in fact, think that that was the best match on the show. I really, really loved that match. And it was so... It's funny, Dragon Gate USA pay-per-views, it's like you got this big mix of styles. You've got traditional Dragon Gate, you know, the Dragon Gate tag matches. You've got Dragon Gate singles matches. You've got singles matches featuring, you know, top-level indie guys like Austin Aries. You have matches featuring guys you've never seen, like Rich Swann. And it's just a great mix of styles, and there was something for everything on this show. I'm not a big fan. I know you're far more into Japanese wrestling than I am, Mike. I have found that I'm not a big fan of the Dragon Gate main event singles matches. They just, I mean, they feel like they go on too long. They're a collection of moves, and I don't know. It's just, it's really, I found, not my cup of tea. The tag matches I really like. But the singles matches have kind of been misses for me every single time.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of the tag matches, especially the multiple man tag matches, far more than the singles matches. You know, and every once in a while they yeah, you know, again, if you had an Achilles heel, that would actually be their biggest one. And Shingo's gotten better, and you know, there's been guys from over the years, but for the most part, yeah, the tag matches always outshine, because when you do get you know, just two guys in there, it's two guys doing a bunch of moves for a long time, and that's, you know, compounded more for someone who doesn't get a chance to follow any Japan at all, or, you know, hasn't had a chance to see or to follow the Infinity TV show or anything like that. I mean, it just makes it stick out a little bit more, and that's why, I mean, it is, those shows have to be a, you know, a cavalcade of unique and, you know, things thrown against the wall. I mean, far more than Ring of Honor or anybody else because of that style. It's the same way with Lucha. I think if a Lucha show is going to really catch on here, even the amount of population for it to really cross over, you're going to have a little bit of everything. And I think they did a good job with that. I didn't think they did a great job. I thought, was the show worth $15? Absolutely. And again, I still need to see the first part, but as far as what the rest of the card was and how well they got across the fact they were having this draft and everything else, I mean, it was good, but it wasn't spectacular by any means.
Yeah, it was well worth the $15. And again, for those of you that bought it on internet pay-per-view, you should be able to go up today and watch the opener. I have not watched it yet, but I know that it looked really good, and it was a match I was actually looking most forward to of anything on the show.
Well, so, Chuck Taylor. Taylor is always entertaining, and if nothing else, that's the reason to order these shows.
I'm a fan of Chuck Taylor, but I'm a bigger fan of Ricochet. I think Ricochet is awesome. I think he's going to be something big one of these days.
Well, he's teaming with something big, too, because you've got Brody Lee and Ricochet teaming. Now think of this for people who do know Japanese wrestling. Think of Sima standing there. Think of Genki Horiguchi standing there. Think of Ricochet standing there, and then think of Brody Lee, like, all giving him a big bear hug in the background.
Yeah, there were people that were not a fan of Brody Lee being added to Shima's group and Warriors International, and I don't know. To me, let's see how it goes.
And Akebono dance, which is another reason to order this.
Yeah, Akebono was on the show. He danced. He did a comedy match with the Assyrian Portal, and Brody Lee is his partner. And Brody Lee and Akebono broke up, and they had a match the following night at the traditional pay-per-view taping on Saturday night. And I did not, sadly, get good reviews of that match. It only went like 3 minutes, and Akebono could not do a whole hell of a lot. So that kind of made me sad, but I guess we'll see how it goes. Dragon Gate, of course, you can get more information at dgusa.tv. And again, the pay-per-view is available up at gofightlive.tv. So you can catch the entire show from start to finish. And all of the issues with syncing and that sort of thing are presumably all fixed up for that replay. So make sure you head up there and check that out. We're going to head to a break right here. When we come back, we've got more news. We'll take some more emails as well and probably take some phone calls. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Going to take your phone calls and emails here in just a moment. We're talking the news as well. Email question here about Linda McMahon's election, noting that a lot of wrestlers, including Mick Foley and Kurt Angle, are now singing her praises. And he wants to know if we think this is genuine, or perhaps they are smart enough to realize that TNA might not be around much longer, and they're just making sure there's a place to go if need be. What are your thoughts, Mike?
Well, I don't know. This whole thing is looking like it's going to be for naught anyway. Obviously, with the way some of the predictions of the polls and the amazing lack of press Linda's gotten here in the final days leading up to the campaign, I mean, you know, it's just some people may actually believe what they're saying, and others are just doing it to kiss up. But, you know, I ultimately it's not going to matter. The Washington Post today, with everything that was talked about with women running, I mean, Angle in Nevada, who's going after Harry Reid's seat, you know, is a far bigger story than Linda McMahon right now. In fact, there was only a very small piece on her today where it just says McMahon could be down for the count underneath a little picture where the Blumenthal campaign has got one a road sign up just says Linda because she's bought everything else.
Well, it is Tuesday. Tuesday's election day. She was behind by double digits in the polls as of a couple of days ago. And Mike, since you're kind of in that general geographic area, certainly more so than I am, feeling has been that she really closed the gap to within 3 to 5 points for a while there due to her excessive spending. And then I guess the feeling is it got to the point where she just kept spending and spending, and it finally started to turn people off. Is that kind of the feeling that you got?
Well, I think it's also just that it took people by, you know, surprise. She kind of peaked when Christine O'Donnell, too, in Delaware, you know, really surprised everyone by winning the GOP nomination for the seat. It hit that peak because people are pissed off and people want alternate candidates and you know, with the amount of media that's out there now than ever, and the fact that it was she's a high-profile name, you know, throwing her own money out there, saying, you know, I'm not going to take a paycheck and this, that, and the other. But then it just, you know, it gets to a certain point, and then you realize as it gets closer to the campaign, okay, I got to vote now. And did Blumenthal's lying about being in Vietnam outweigh, you know, Linda's lying about her college credits when she was named to the Board of Education? And you start really looking at what this person can do. And obviously the feeling right now is people like Blumenthal more, and it just, it has gone downhill, but the spending hasn't helped. But with that said, I don't think that really matters. I think just people kind of step back and really realized, okay, I don't think Linda McMahon's really ready to be a senator here. Her performances in the debates weren't all that great, so she had all the political stuff working against her anyway, besides just the amount of money she spent backlash.
Vince McMahon last week filed suit against the state of Connecticut. He was upset with the informal ruling that polling places would have the right to tell WWE fans to take off their WWE merchandise if they came to the polling areas, or they might be sent home to change before they would be allowed to vote. And he filed suit. And I thought, this dude's out of his mind. He's really lost it this time. And shortly thereafter, the polling folks were told that it's okay. WWE fans can, in fact, wear their merchandise. So Vince is now sending merchandise to all of these individuals, and he's setting up areas near the polls where WWE fans can show up to get free merchandise. And I don't know, Vince getting involved, and not just Vince, crazy Vince getting involved with Linda's campaign, I think it's bad news for her campaign, just personally.
Yeah, I think that just the less he's on, the better, because it's not like it's too easy to pull up too much, like him smacking Armin Kontayan's notes on HBO or getting all up in Bob Costas' face and things like that. I mean, it's just stay out of it. That's what you have professionals for. That's why you have all of that money. You pay them to run her campaign. You stay out of it. And you know, it looks creepy. And I joked about it last week over when the caller had called in about, you know, do you really want wrestling fans to represent you? But, I mean, you know, it's one thing to let them wear stuff. It's another thing to actually put on the dog and pony show and the circus clown show by having, you know, these WWE kiosks you know, right next to her campaign. I mean, is that really what you want Linda McMahon to be known for when people go up to vote? Don't you want her to be the, you know, the CEO of a major company and just think about it white bread that way? Think about her on the Board of Education. Why do you really necessarily need to bring the circus over to the polling places? She's going to have enough face time anyway without that stuff.
Do you think if she fails, she'll run again?
You know, with their track record of one and done, with the exception of movies, you know, probably not. I mean, the thing is, she's got her name out there enough, but I'm not sure if she did enough without being exposed too much as a political novice to really grind herself in. Now, because of the money, though, I'm sure the GOP up there is going to want to stay near her just because of the power and the influence and the reach that they have. So I can see it happening again, but it may be for like a House seat or something like that. But I don't know. I could see it, but this was a lot of money. This was a lot of money that they poured in, and they're looking at their stock going down. They're looking at, you know, international, you know, sales down and pay per views down, and their cash dividend paying out down. I don't know.
It's going to come down to Vince probably discovering that no matter how much money he's got, he didn't have control over this one. And I think that's going to lead to some very interesting Raw shows. I know that's kind of a strange... Some of you will hear that and think that's kind of goofy, but if you've been following wrestling for a while, I mean, if they lose this election and Vince wakes up on Wednesday and realizes that he spent $50 million, they spent $50 million, and got nothing for it except for investigations and bad media and everything else, I mean, we're going to have some interesting Raws. He's going to be on the warpath.
I wonder who's going to play Nancy Pelosi, who's going to play Blumenthal, how fast we can get Abraham Washington back up.
I would guess within a year there's a character with the last name Blumenthal. It seems inevitable to me.
Hire somebody and just get beaten to death. I mean, yeah, that could be, you know, Chavo's new gimmick if the Eagle thing doesn't work out.
Yeah. Question here, why is Cena's finishing move now the AA as opposed to the Attitude Adjustment? What is suddenly so offensive about the latter? I don't think it's offensive. I think that's just what they're calling it right now. I mean, I'm sure that it will still be called the Attitude Adjustment, but AA is probably just easier to spit out, perhaps for Michael Cole. And why were Vance Archer and Curt Hawkins broken up? Is there heat on Archer, or is this part of Vince's goal to break up any and all tag teams? Actually, I think there was heat on Archer. I don't know what happened. I should probably ask, but I know that he was buried on commentary. And usually when a guy is buried on commentary, I mean, obviously that's all coming from Vince McMahon, so somebody screwed up somewhere. And I would presume that that's what happened with young Vance Archer. So there you go. Here's one for you, Mike. Is Steve Mazzagatti really that bad? Sure, he's made some bad decisions in the past, but I can think of just as many bad Eve Levine decisions, and he is seen as one of the better MMA referees.
That's because he's French. Mazzagatti's obviously got the most high-profile one, and the fact that Dana yells at him a lot, but I mean, yeah. Considering the amount of bad judging and bad refereeing that takes place all over the country and all over the world, Mazzagatti, you know, when put up in those comparisons, not that bad. Is he, you know, Big John? Absolutely not. But, you know, again, he's not the worst guy in the world.
Thing to me is, like, Mazzagatti has improved, I feel, but I don't want dudes learning on the job. You know what I mean? I mean, once you bring a guy in and he clearly doesn't know what he's doing, he should not be used again. You don't keep using him and he starts figuring things out. That's when something bad happens.
Well, you'd think that, but then we've been saying that in boxing for years and years and years and years and years and years, and now those same boxing people have their tentacles in, you know, MMA due to the state athletic commissions. And that's the biggest thing that needs to change as far as, you know, if our military is good enough to be trained by Pat Miletich, judges and referees should go be trained by Pat Miletich.
Sure.
You know, things
or
like
Big
that,
John.
Because until that changes, I mean, we're really just kind of chasing it in circles. It's, you know, it's easy to debate and bandy around and things like that, but realistically, nothing ever changes.
person says, you think WWE bringing back King of the Ring for a three-hour Raw is a sign that they are failing to recognize the overall problem with the product to think that a few single-week ratings pops will begin an upward trend? And if you do think King of the Ring is good enough to pop a one-week rating for a three-hour show, why do they think it is not enough of a draw to base a pay-per-view round? It's the simplest of all concept pay-per-views. It's not like they have a problem putting out pay-per-views without the full card announced lately. Well, yeah, they have put out pay-per-views without the full card announced, but they're not working. So you don't want to just do more of them. King of the Ring is like, believe me, I think if WWE were given the option, they would do shows that were an hour and a half long. They would not be doing three-hour shows. They don't like doing three-hour shows. Three-hour shows are very, very hard, and especially when you're going to be doing three-hour shows in 5 weeks coming up at the end of the month. That's really not going to be any fun for people working in WWE. They would love to just do 90-minute shows. A lot of these are calls by the USA Network. USA Network wants, let's get some big ratings for sweeps or whatever the case might be. So it's usually a USA call that results in these three-hour shows. So I would not blame this on WWE. As far as King of the Ring, they're doing it because it's an easy concept for a three-hour Raw. I mean, if you watch the last King of the Ring, they really don't care about King of the Ring. The matches are all 2 minutes long. The main event, when William Regal won, it was like he won a bunch of two-minute matches and then maybe won a four-minute match in the main event. I mean, it's not considered a big deal, and certainly not big enough to build a pay-per-view around, especially since the concept of King of the Ring is rather sports-like, a tournament. And they want to distance themselves from things that appear sports-like. So we're going to get Mike's thoughts on this when we come back from the break. And we'll take some phone calls and emails as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Want to go to the phones very quickly. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Zombie from NorCal.
What's up?
Just a couple comments about the Dragon Gate USA iPay-per-view from Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good show. I think that the Jon Moxley and Jimmy Jacobs, I quit match, stole the show. I'm just a little disappointed in the finish with the spike to the groin, because Jimmy used that same finish against BJ Whitmer in IWA Mid-South in an I quit match. And I was a little surprised that they went with that finish again. But, both guys did their homework, and they did put on one hell of a heated match, and it's going to be I'm not sure if this is the blow-off. Do you know if that was the blow-off for that feud, Brian?
That's the blow-off, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. I think they both came out, on top, where there wasn't a loser. The whole violence, violent feud, and they're both gonna make waves. But what did you think of the iPay-per-view?
I want to thank you for the call. We were talking about it a little bit earlier. We both enjoyed the show. I think that every finish has been done before, and if they did a finish in IWA Mid-South, I would guess that most fans probably did not see that finish. So I didn't have a problem with it. And, I mean, if you're going to do an I Quit match and you're going to use a spike, well, that's a great way to blow that feud off. And now I guess the idea is that Jimmy Jacobs is on a quest to win the Open the Freedom Gate title. And, Mike, what are your thoughts on that program there, Jimmy Jacobs in the main event mix? And going back to the previous segment, your thoughts on King of the Ring?
Well, as far as King of the Ring goes, I guess it'll be good to see like Yoshitatsu out there again, because I can see him coming back from commercial with no entrance and getting beaten up and pinned in 30 seconds by someone. But I don't know where they'd go with it. I hope William Regal wins it again, just so they don't have to change his Titantron when he comes to the ring. But as far as Jimmy Jacobs, I'm not the biggest Jimmy Jacobs fan in the world, but I did have a chance to see. I heard the promo that he cut afterwards, in the Crimson Mask. And if I'm, again, do I really want to see BB Hulk and Jimmy Jacobs? Not really. But with that said, if I'm Dragon Gate, what else is there to lose? I mean, if you can't have Austin Aries there on a full-time basis or anything like that, I don't think it's a bad idea at all. And considering he's had the Age of the Fall stuff and all this other, in this age of the internet, as far as his indie career goes, he's been followed pretty much, you know, since the start, so it's just another little restart for him, and I guess time will tell.
Got an email question here. This person is asking about A and B shows and bragging rights, and he basically notes that on the Right After Wrestling show, they noted that the Score in Canada actually receives virtually identical ratings from the Canadian audience for Raw and SmackDown. My question is, why do they have this mentality of A and B shows? It seems to me that these shows would draw no matter what superstars are on which program, and the only limiting factor to each brand's rating is the time and exposure that it's on. What do you think? Is this statistic true for other areas of the world where these shows are on the same channel? It depends on, let's see, in Mexico, I'd actually have to look at the latest numbers. It's rather close, actually. And SmackDown does very well because Rey Mysterio is on the show. But in the U.S., I mean, the gap is pretty substantial between Raw and SmackDown. I mean, Raw is usually doing between 4.5 and 5 million viewers, and SmackDown is usually doing about 3.5 million viewers. So you're looking at, you know, the difference between Raw and SmackDown in the U.S. is about the Impact audience. That's still quite a few people, 1.5 million. So, I mean, there is an A and a B show, and, you know, they consider the A show the live show. It's the first show they do of the week. After they're done with Raw, everybody's kind of tired, and sometimes, you know, SmackDown gets, secondary treatment. You'll notice that they do a lot of angles on Raw, and they do more wrestling on SmackDown. That's because they spend a lot of time putting Raw together, and by the time it's time to put SmackDown together, they're tired, and so it's easier to just put out a bunch of matches. So, you know, it's still a company based in America, and the ratings for Raw and SmackDown can be very similar elsewhere around the world, but it's still an American company. They're still living and dying by the American ratings, and so that's why we've got an A and a B show.
Yeah, just, you know, if the SmackDown TV show is doing better in Belgium, they'll send the SmackDown crew over there faster than they will the Raw one or something like that. I just, you know, it's 100% where you get your advertising revenue from, and you know, yeah, the longevity of the show and the shine of Monday Night Raw, that's, you know, probably always going to be the show.
What are your thoughts on Raw this past Monday night and the Survivor Series main event, which is Wade Barrett versus Randy Orton with John Cena as the special referee? And if Randy Orton retains the title, John Cena is fired. But if Wade Barrett wins the title, John Cena is free of the Nexus, meaning he essentially has to screw Randy Orton.
Ooh, drama. Now, somebody more cynical would just say, well, why should he feel bad about screwing John Cena out of anything anyway?
Randy Orton.
Or Randy Orton. But, you know, I'll say this. Raw was a very safe show. It's been very safe the last 2 weeks. They have put a lot of thought into it, but it's been, you know, seemingly very, very simplistic, even though the storyline is moving along well, I think. But you have to chuck your brain to really believe why this should be an issue for John Cena, you know, dropping to his knees, you know, thanking the good Lord that, you know, he's got a way out. But, oh, my God, the drama of looking over and seeing Randy Orton over there, a man who kicks people in the head for a living and would do it to him, why he would feel bad about screwing him. But it does continue on with the storyline, and Wade Barrett has been fantastic. And even though it is very safe and simplistic, they are actually, I think, doing it well. So I'm not going to complain about that.
You know, the one thing that they have not mentioned, but I mean, it's pretty obvious if you watch the show, is that really, John Cena doesn't have to screw Randy Orton. I mean, by having that storyline, you're basically saying that Wade Barrett can't win on his own. Can't John Cena just stand there and hope that Wade Barrett wins and then jump in if something occurs? No, they've got to play it up like, you know, the only way Wade Barrett is winning this title is if John Cena happens to screw Randy Orton.
That's what you have with PG.
That's right. Let's go to the phones. You're on Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Matt from Pittsburgh. How you doing, Brian?
What's going on, Matt?
I had a question for you guys. Do either of you know anybody who saw the movie Knucklehead? And I did hear somebody told me that it made $75. This can't be true, can it?
I think the $75 came from Dave speculating in The Observer, because he wrote that before the movie came out. And actually, it was after the movie came out, but he was trying to do the math, and, you know, it was in 6 theaters, and, you know, there were, you know, 3 or 4 people per theater. And so I think he came up with the idea of, you know, this movie could have made $75. And I think that got out everywhere. See, we don't know because, like, nobody has any numbers on that movie. Like, if you go to the Box Office Mojo or whatever. Actually, I haven't checked in the last couple of days. I should check right now. But if you check those pages, I mean, there's, like, no listing of that movie having made any money whatsoever. So, I mean, it may have made $75 for all I know, but it didn't make a lot.
That's awesome. Thanks, Brad.
All right, no problem. Thanks very much for the call. Yeah, we can almost do math right here. If it was in 6 theaters with an average of 5 people per theater and it played 3 times per day, that's 90 tickets sold, and we'll just say how much are tickets nowadays? $10?
Yeah, let's just say $10.
All right, $10. Yeah, so a $900 gross.
Now, how much did the film cost to send it to the theater?
It probably a hell of a lot more than $900. So, yes, Dave was right that the website probably made more that weekend than Knucklehead did.
Jim Cornette still complains that Paul E. owes him that money from, like, sending tapes from Smoky Mountain to ECW. It's like, you know, at least $500 more than that.
Yeah. Sad times. You didn't watch TNA, but the big storyline on the show involved concussions, where Mr. Anderson got hit with a chair last week by Jeff Hardy, and Jeff actually was trying to hit him in the back, but the chair ended up hitting him in the back of the head, busted him open, gave him a concussion, and Mr. Anderson is now out of the pay-per-view this coming Sunday. And Matt Morgan ended up confronting Eric Bischoff and Ric Flair and the other people in charge, and he could not believe that they were planning on having Jeff Jarrett wrestle Mr. Anderson in a chain match later on in the show. Why a chain match, you ask? Why not? So anyway, he kept asking them and talking about how, you know, concussions are a big deal, and I think we know more about them today, and guys should never wrestle or compete in sports if they've suffered a concussion, and Eric Bischoff and Ric Flair, the heels, were saying, come on now, this is wrestling, we're all tough, of course we're going to wrestle hurt. And in the end, Matt Morgan ended up coming out and replacing the injured Mr. Anderson in the match with Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett beat him clean, which is another story entirely, just to illustrate how stupid TNA is. But regardless, Matt Morgan went out there, he took his place, he's been kicked out of Fortune. And I actually thought they did a really good job in the show as far as, and this is amazing with TNA, a storyline that is relevant in 2010. Normally they go back to the 90s. They go back to a lot of WCW storylines that didn't work and tried to recreate them, or even WWE storylines that didn't work. This was a storyline that had to do with something that is real and something that is a major story in 2010. And the babyface was the guy fighting for people with concussions, which is the way you need to do it. So I actually thought this was a really good deal. And unfortunately, the way they handled it with Matt Morgan doing his babyface turn and then losing clean to Jeff Jarrett, that was ridiculously stupid, especially since Matt Morgan is headlining the pay-per-view next Sunday. But I guess you can't win them all. So I know you didn't see it, Mike, but any thoughts on that angle?
Well, I'm not surprised by the, you know, him losing clean part, considering that Samoa Joe got, you know, pinned, you know, instead of... you know, by Kevin Nash when Nash was leaving, but I don't really particularly trust TNA to do something with a concussion angle. But with that said, I mean, from how it sounds here initially, they actually did a good job of it, and good for them. Even though, you know, I think it's probably everyone that said, you know, the unprotected chair shots and everything else that's happened in TNA. I mean, part of me wonders if it's just because of that.
I want to talk very briefly about some injuries. CM Punk is out of action for the time being. He's got a hip injury, and he underwent an MRI the other day, and on his Twitter appeared to suggest that the results were not great. We don't know what's going on. He may need surgery, at which point he'd be out of action for a while. But, Mike, I know you're a big fan of CM Punk on commentary.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, as much as it hurts my feelings to not see him in the ring, him coming out for commentary on Raw on Monday night, I thought was awesome. So not going to hurt my feelings whatsoever if they decide to use him more, you know, on commentary, which they really, really should. Have him on NXT because why not? Have him come out on Raw a couple times, like he did for the Bryan Ziggler match. I thought that was a really good idea.
Have you been watching NXT on the internet?
I have.
Really? How was the last couple of shows? I haven't watched them yet.
Well, you need to see the Halloween episode is amazing. It's NXT. Naomi was the hamburger helper hand. Although Caitlyn dressed as Vicky Guerrero was awesome. That really did make me laugh. AJ is your geeky superhero. So, yeah, they had a chocolate eating contest, which at the end, you know, you could make a joke of how bad the purging could be at the end. Yes, Caitlyn actually threw up. She was choking, and thankfully Hornswoggle helped her and gave her the Heimlich maneuver, and she threw up her chocolate all over Vicky Guerrero. So that's NXT. Maxine, by the way, won the competition. Oksana and Goldust are getting married next week.
We're going to talk about this more after the break. I do know that WWE was very happy with Caitlyn after that show, so she's probably going to get a deal. But we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. The wedding is coming up on Tuesday, Mike. Oksana and Goldust, and weddings never go off without a hitch, which is quite the statement, actually, in WWE. So what do you expect to happen?
Ted DiBiase is able to flex enough power to get her kicked out of the country. And the only way she can stay is if Goldust turns over the $1 million title. And then he turns it over because he needs to keep his woman. They get married. She turns on him. And Ted DiBiase now has Oksana and Maryse. And it could be like Precious and Precious, or Sunshine and Sunshine 2 in world class, where we could then build towards a feud between Maryse and Oksana, where dresses just don't stay down.
That's quite the extravagant prediction right there.
I've put more thought into this than they have by far, and I didn't put any thought into it at all. But I'm sure something like that's going to happen. Either that or, you know, something happens where Oksana gets deported anyway because, again, from the pay-per-view and everything else, that woman's probably not ready to be on TV anytime soon.
Well, everybody, we are out of time for this show. Of course, I want to thank you all for listening. We're going to be live again next week. We're always on 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline Radio Network. You can also listen to the show live on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a link to listen to the stream every weekend when the show starts Sunday afternoon, so check that out if it's not playing in your local area. And of course, we have links up later on in the evening for you to download the show as well if you don't get a chance to hear it live. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. We have free radio shows and a bunch of other stuff. We got a lot of stuff coming up next week, including the TNA pay-per-view, which I don't even remember the name of it, but hopefully we will by next week. I believe it's Turning Point. So we'll preview that. We'll talk more about the upcoming WEC event and all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. So thanks again, Mike. Thanks again, everybody at Sports Byline USA. We are out of here. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.